Josh Koda has been teaching meditation and the Dharma in the Theravada lay tradition for 6 years, most principally at his packed weekly New York Dharma Punk classes. He is a visiting teacher at the New York Zen Center of Contemporary Care Hospice Program and a speaker for several years, running at the Meditate NYC. His podcast on Dharma Punk NYC .padbean.com has a large and loyal following. Josh studied his studies of Dharma in the 80s and has attended many study retreats with numerous teachers, including Ajahn Gop, Maro, and Susito. Josh lives in Brooklyn, New York.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I'm Josh, and I'm here from New York Dharma Punks, and it's always an honor to be invited here. It's been quite a few years I've been teaching at Meditate New York NYC, and while Dharma Punks is a sangha that is in many cities and attracts a lot of young and new practitioners, each of the Dharma Punks teachers is slightly different. I have personally studied in the Thai forest tradition of the Theravada, so we're pretty old school. We tend to focus our studies on the Pali Canon, which is certainly considered to be amongst the oldest recorded teachings of the original Buddha. It goes back 2,500 years, and a little bit about Dharma Punks. It's on Tuesdays and Thursdays over on the Bowery, and if you want to join us, it's always free. The only thing is we'll hold you down and give you a tattoo on your neck. No, we won't do that. We should. No, we won't. Actually, I don't know why I said that, but it's fun to say that. You don't have to have a tattoo to be in Dharma Punks. Oh, it's funny. Whenever the news people are there and taking photographs of us, they always find the 10 people with the tattoos and put them all together so it looks like we're, you know, you're that our sangha is made up of prison escapees, but Chodo and I are laughing. I'm just like, all right, I'm going to teach something. I'm going to actually try to teach something, which is from the original teachings of the Buddha, which is when a lot of people come to Dharma Punks, they don't really want to have a spiritual path immediately. They don't really they're not looking certainly for a religion. They're looking for a way to deal with our obsessive thoughts. And the Buddha actually had a wonderful teaching from the oldest text called the Vitakkasanthana, and it's the five ways of removing obsessive thoughts. And I thought I'd tell you what those five ways are. First thing I should say is obsessive thoughts are called papancha in the Buddhist old teachings, and it means basically thoughts that multiply in the brain. So you know that you're in obsession when you have a lot of repeating thoughts, the same thought over and over again, or perhaps a plethora of thoughts that are very similar, worrying about one's financial future, worrying about what other people are thinking about us, worrying about how we compare to other people, worrying about what's going to happen to me in the future. Generally, of course, the fuel of papancha is thinking about me, self, what's going to happen to me. That's generally the miracle grow of obsession. You know, I don't, when I worry about you, think a lot of obsessive thoughts. I tend to have one thought and then it moves along. But when it's me, boy, I can think about myself for a long time. So it tends to be a lot of repeating thoughts, and they also tend to be, they tend to generally be thoughts about things we can't possibly know, like what's going to happen to me in the future, or what are other people thinking about me or saying about me when I'm not there, whatever. So you can see they're sort of thoughts that can multiply and go on forever because they're not based on anything that's knowable. They're based on pure supposition and guesswork. And they also tend to, obsessive thoughts also tend to speak to us in a way that we would never let any other human being speak to us. I don't know about you, but I would never let anybody else follow me around and talk to me the way my brain talks to me all the time. I would never let somebody follow me around and go, you know, knock me on the shoulder and go, hey, loser, you know, I'd be like, you again. I'd say, you know what, we're going to have to take a break. But with my brain, because the thoughts are appearing in my mind, I tend to take them a lot more seriously or think that they're me and I have to listen to them. If they came from your mouth, I would say, well, I don't know, that person has pretty much demonstrated that they're completely insane. So, I would probably avoid you if you said a lot of the things that my thoughts have said to me over the years. But because, again, it's in my mind, I don't tend to. So those are some of the things that let us know when we're in obsession. We tend to hear thoughts that we would never allow ourselves to say to another human being or allow another human being to say to us. They're generally based on repetition. They generally often use tactics that are below the belt in the way they talk to us, our thoughts, and also often they are based on things we can't possibly know, pure supposition. Till the Buddha said when we're in meditation, meditation is not, the Buddha said, a time when we're supposed to just stop thinking. In fact, the first jhana, the Buddha said, is completely kept in place, is caused by right thinking. It's actually, that's part of in his sutta on two sorts of thinking, he said he actually took right thinking, which is thinking based on generosity and gratitude and goodwill and appreciation. Thoughts that don't cause suffering and stress are actually the ways we get into the sublime states. And it's only then that we can let go of thoughts. But what do we do when we sit down in meditation and we don't have these obsessive worries immediately go away? What do we do when we're captivated by a thought that just continuously repeats itself? So there's five tools that the Buddha said in the Vitakka Santana Sutta, which is the 20th teaching of the middling discourses. The first technique is replacing thoughts. He said when you have a thought, for instance, you're thinking about yourself, or you're thinking about something that you want very much, or you're thinking about something that you've lost, or you're thinking about something unknowable, the Buddha said the first thing we do is simply try to find one of the thoughts that we know from our experience doesn't cause us stress and suffering. And simply, the Buddha used the analogy like using a hammer to knock out a peg with another peg in a wall. You're replacing one thought with another. So you cultivate purposely a thought like, for example, if we're feeling like we are worried about money or how much stuff we have or what's going to happen to me, the Buddha counseled thinking about gratitude, feeling grateful for what we've accomplished in life, the people we've helped, the how far we've come in our spiritual practice, or just feeling grateful for ways we've helped other people in our lives. This is an example of changing one thought that causes stress with a thought that doesn't cause stress. Another example is for when we're feeling hurt by someone. We're feeling abused or mistreated. Two kinds of thoughts that work very well is, of course, first of all, forgiveness, reflecting on how we've acted unskillfully in the past, and then forgiving ourselves, and then forgiving the person that we believe has hurt us for the exact same or similar actions. Of course, we're forgiving not because it's going to let them off the hook. They're still going to reap the karmic benefits of their actions. But we don't want to add more suffering into the mix by repeating the thought over and over and over again of how I've been abused or mistreated. Other things the Buddha said is when we're in envy, to think thoughts of appreciation. When we want something that somebody else has accomplished or jealous, try to develop the capability of appreciating that other people have accrued benefits from their own skillful actions and not simply view the world as a limited supply of happiness. Start feeling grateful for other people's joy. As the Dalai Lama once said, if we allow ourselves to be happy because other people are happy, our chances for joy go up 6 billion because there are 6 billion other people on the planet. So it's quite a powerful tool. So that's the first technique when we're dealing in obsession and thoughts that repeat themselves, is simply to replace the thoughts. The second, and I'm going to try to actually teach it in order, is to reflect on the thought, which is simply to ask yourself, the Buddha uses the example of ask yourself, what would it be like if I thought this way all the time? Or what would it be like if this was the last thought I had and I died in the next moment? That's a little grim. So maybe I usually ask myself, is this thought something that I would ever say to anyone else? Would I ever allow myself? And if it doesn't pass that muster, if I can't imagine saying this thought to a friend, then I know that the thought is not one that I should seriously contemplate as coming from a wise part of my mind. There's lots of different ways you can reflect on whether a thought is valuable or not. You can think back to the last time you thought this way and ask yourself, did it end up well? Or you can ask yourself, can I imagine one of my teachers or somebody I respect ever saying this to me? If it doesn't pass any of these basic generic tests, the Buddha said then move on to step number 3, which is reject the thought. And the Buddha said basically the way to do this is imagine there's a crazy person on the street shouting all kinds of insane things. You wouldn't go up to that person and argue with them, as we so often argue with our obsessive thoughts. You wouldn't go up and try to reason with them, as we so often do with our obsessions. We try to, you know, come up with a reason why, you know, we try to talk down our obsessions. The Buddha said, in fact, know that this thought you've already determined is not worthy. It's insanity. And simply smile, say hello, and keep moving. One of the techniques I do is I give my insane voices in my head. Boy, I sound like a schizophrenic, don't I? I love that. I'm quite a salesman for Dharma Punks. So I'm talking about voices in my head. But anyway, why the hell not? So I tend to give the obsession and obsessive thoughts in my head, the fears about what's going to happen to me, I tend to give them names, or, you know, like, hello, Mr. Worrywart, or hello, Mr. Always Has to Figure It Out. And that way, when I greet these thoughts, I don't believe they're me. I don't think, oh, that's me talking to myself. I think, oh, I'm externalizing the thought. I'm actually giving it a personality. I'm disidentifying with the thought. So that's a way to reject it. Simply give it a name or personality, don't believe it's you, and simply acknowledge it and then keep on moving on to the next thing. And sometimes, of course, believe me, when there it's obsessions, it's this practice has to go on and on and on throughout certain meditations. You're not just going to sometimes when it's a fear or it's a real worry, it's not immediately going to go away simply because you've acknowledged it and said, you know, I know you're insane. I'm going to keep on moving until I find a safe thought or whatever. But that's part of the practice. Now, for me, the fourth technique of dealing with obsessions is the most powerful. And that's what the Buddha talked about, relaxing the body. Find the place in your body where when you become obsessive, gets really tense and tight and contracted. In my case, when I'm worried about something, my stomach gets really tight and my shoulders start moving up towards my ears. I must look really crazy. I can't even do it, but I found myself like over the computer when I'm very busy and I'm writing something, my shoulders will be like this and my stomach will be tight and I'll be bent over the machine and I'm in this whole thing about how much I have to do and how little time I have to do it in. And I remember, oh, okay, the core way to deal with obsessions for me is to first find the breath and take 10 deep, long breaths, and then find also at the same place those places where I hold my stress and breathe into those areas. Relax the stomach, breathe into the shoulders. I found that I cannot be in an obsessive thought or be caught up in a repeating worry if I've got my body relaxed. So this has been a very core practice for me over the years, is learning where my body holds fear, holds sadness, holds anger, holds all these things, and seeing it and then relaxing it as much as possible. It doesn't mean that the thought will completely go away, but the power that obsession and fear has over us is because it's fighting us in so many different battlefields. It's not only filling up the mind with repeating thoughts, but it's also, while we're not aware of it, making the body tense. And so it's very, very difficult when we're in panic or fear or anxiety or worry to work with it, because we're fighting so many different variations of the same state. Now, finally, the fifth and the last of the Buddha's techniques of dealing with obsessions is one that I actually hardly ever use. And in fact, I really can't imagine very many people using it. But the Buddha actually said, in times when we're about to cause harm to someone, to literally bite down on our teeth and hold our hands really tight, like in fists, and beat the thought out of our minds. So I guess that would have to be a thought that's really sort of, you know, messed up. You're really thinking about killing someone, or, you know, I'm going to steal something, or, you know, I'm going to get even with them. Then if the thought, you've tried all the four things, you've tried replacing the thought, you've tried reflecting on it, you've acknowledged that it's insane, you've given it a name, you've smiled, you've moved past it, you've relaxed the body. If you still got that thought, and that thought is, go to a therapist first, but if you still got that thought, Bob will help you. But if you still have that thought, then you sit and you like really clench down and you hope it will go away, and you like that. And I've never actually done it, so I'm teaching you something that I actually never really do. But it's always nice to do that. It makes me feel like I know more things than I actually do. I'm really grateful that I've been up here. Anytime you want to join us at Dharma Punks to hear some of the Pali Canon and my own take on the teachings of the Buddha, Dharma Punks is free every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. And it's an honor to be up here with so many wise, wonderful teachers, especially my friends Chodo and Toshin, who I love and admire and feel great kinship with, and other members from New York Insight. So thank you for listening, and I hope I've brought some of the wonderful wisdom of the Buddha to you today.